Hi, this is Rick Love. I'm president of Peace Catalyst International, and I'm happy to interview today Adam Estel and Usama Shami as a part of the Charity and Security Network Peace Building Series. First of all, let me give you some introductory comments about the two men. Adam Estel serves as executive director for Evangelicals for Middle East Understanding. He's earned a BA in Spanish education and an MA in global leadership from Fuller Theological Seminary with a special emphasis on Muslim-Christian relations. Adam's traveled to many Middle Eastern countries on peacemaking tours, including Lebanon, Israel, Palestine, and Jordan. He's attended Orangewood Church of the Nazarene in Phoenix for over 30 years, serving in a variety of capacities as lay leader. Currently, he's on the church board, the missions director, and recovery group leader. Usama Shami is the president of the Islamic Community Center of Phoenix since 2002 and the president and founder of the newly formed Phoenix Peace Project. For the past 8 years, Usama has been involved in numerous interfaith and peacemaking activities to promote understanding between followers of different faiths. Usama holds a BS degree in mechanical engineering and an MS in nuclear engineering, both from the University of Arizona. He works for the utility industry and teaches at Glendale Community College. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Usama, for joining us. Adam, could you give a short summary of your organization, Evangelicals for Middle East Understanding? Tell me a bit about what you do there.
Sure thing. Thanks, Rick, for the great introduction, and it's awesome to be here with you and Usama. Our work with EMEU is mainly focused on bridge building. There are various ways that we go about that, but the main focus that we try to engage is helping Christians in the West, especially in America, have a better understanding of the Middle East. The fact that there are upwards of 14 million Christians in the Middle East, the fact that a lot of times the relationships between Christians and Muslims and Jews in the Middle East is a model for understanding that we can follow in the West. And also, we work to point out to people in the Middle East the things that are happening here that can be models for bridge building and understanding as well. So we're really a peacemaking, bridge building organization. We don't primarily focus on Israel-Palestine, although that's a big topic of conversation, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our goals regarding that conflict is just to help people have a better understanding that we believe that God calls us to love both sides of that conflict. So we ask evangelicals not to give up on their love for Israel, but also to find room in their hearts to love Palestinians as well. So that's a little
Excellent.
Brief summary on what we do as an organization.
Usama, you're the president and founder of a newly formed Phoenix Peace Project. Tell us a bit about that.
The vision that we had after working with Adam on many projects is also from a Muslim perspective, we share the same goals. And we also would like to achieve similar results. And looking, first of all, on Muslims in the U.S., we have a lot of refugees that come out from conflicts in the Middle East.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of them, they need to be re-educated about their own faith to begin with. Yeah, they have a lot of social needs that we try to help with that, but also there is a focus on trying to really introduce them to what being a Muslim means. And in the context of being a Muslim in the West and dealing with Christians, because this is something that is an Islamic tradition that was lost, especially especially in the 20th century because of a lot of the conflicts that happened in the Middle East. So that's what our prime focus is, and trying to also educate Muslims that are already living here about peacemaking through the faith and through dialogue.
Excellent. Well, today's topic is religion and peacemaking, and both of you are specialists in this area. You know, in a world that talks about the clash of civilizations, religions, Islamophobia, and terrorism, I think it's so significant that we can have you in this series and you can share with us your experiences. Adam, you've been involved in interfaith dialogues. Could you tell us some of the work that you've done bringing churches and especially the local Islamic Center in Phoenix there together?
Sure. Well, it all started for us in the fall of 2008. I had just come home from a summer in Lebanon, where it was really my first chance to meet and build relationships with Muslims. And when I came back to Phoenix, I really felt strongly that now that I knew some Muslims on the other side of the world, it would make sense for me to build some friendships in my own backyard. I have to say it's been very fortuitous. I don't believe in coincidences, but some people might say that it is, that the church that I've attended for 30 years is about 500 yards away from the Islamic Community Center of Phoenix, where Usama and I met and built a relationship. So when I got home, I said, well, there's really no good reason for me not to go and knock on the door at the Islamic Center and just say, hey, I'm learning about what it means to build these kinds of interfaith relationships, and we at the Orangewood Church would just like to be good neighbors. So I showed up and didn't know that very recently, before my visit, the Usama and his team had sent a letter to our church asking to use our parking lot for Friday prayers, and my pastor, Bob Hake, was willing to let them do that, and so the foundation for a good relationship and a friendship was already built before I even initiated that. So I was very thankful for that.
So from it started that point, with the parking lot.
Yeah, it started with the parking lot, something that seems maybe insignificant, but we'll let Usama speak to that. I know it's a significant thing for them. From that point, we just tried to get together as often as we could and discuss some of the challenges that we both face in leading congregations and trying to be faithful to our teachings and how we're following God. From that point, we decided to have some joint events. We were meeting for during Ramadan for fast-breaking dinners for the iftar. And then we had a 9/11 memorial service that we jointly did together that, Rick, you were a big part of the leadership of that as well. So we've just tried to hold different events to show our community the unity that we have, that we find in our common belief in the one true God, and our desire to highlight the commonalities that we have together and not ignore the differences, but to address mm-hmm. them in a way that's respectful and loving, and to just really try to build some genuine friendships.
What are some of the unique challenges you face doing peacemaking or peace building?
Absolutely. I think our number one challenge is misunderstanding. Mm. There are a lot of things that fuel this misunderstanding that people have of our Muslim brothers and sisters. Probably first and foremost is the mainstream media and the way that Muslims are portrayed in our country. And so that's a big obstacle that we have to overcome. Unfortunately, even in the digital age where people can go and proactively look for more balanced news sources, we find that a lot of times people stick with what the mainstream media tells them. And there are a lot of reasons for the mainstream media to act that way that I don't know that we want to get into now, but we feel
not in this interview, yes.
No, that's one of our biggest obstacles to overcome is misunderstanding. And then the fear that comes from that. People fear what they don't understand. And it's no secret that 9/11 was a catalyst for this kind of misunderstanding and fear, even though it's horrific to Muslims that they would be associated with the events of that day in a negative way, and patently unfair that they would be associated as an entire group. So these are some of the big obstacles that we face. There are unfortunately, a lot of Christians who play into this misunderstanding and fear. A lot of people will write anything to sell a book.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of quote-unquote Christians who promote this misunderstanding and fear, and that's, we're just facing an uphill battle in that regard.
Okay. Now, Osama, tell us about your experience. Somehow this is something you've been doing for a long time, and then you founded this Phoenix Peace Project. So tell us what your experience is and some of the hurdles you face as a Muslim in America.
Well, I think building on what Adam was saying, 9/11 was a point that actually for a lot of Muslims it opened their eyes on a few things. One of them is that certain extremists in the faith can do horrific things. You know, a lot
yes.
of times as Muslims, you believe that yeah, there is an extreme element that, but you know, you wouldn't imagine what they are capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that that opened the eyes of a lot of Muslims that we're not living in an island, that we're living in
yes.
the States, and there needs to be an engagement with the people around us. And the majority of the people around us are Christians. So the reason for that, because as Adam was saying, is that when 9/11 happened, and again at that time in 9/11, there were some Muslim organizations that they were trying to work on this aspect of building bridges and talking to Christians and doing interfaith dialogue. But the problem is that a lot of the centers were not engaged in that process. So when 9/11 happened, you start seeing a flood of media defining what Muslims are, not
mm-hmm.
only in the U.S., but Muslims around the world, that they're violent people, that their faith teaches them that. And even on individual levels, even working, I'm a professional working in an office, you find your teammates in the office. I remember in 9/11, I was working for a company that was bought by a different company, so I had my meeting with my new boss on 9/11. And we were in a high-rise building, and the guy could not concentrate on talking to me. Everybody had their TVs on, and then they ended
oh
up shutting
gosh.
The building and evacuating people out of the building. So, but the point is, something needed to be done. As Muslims, we could not just you know, go to the mosque and then from the mosque go home without approaching our neighbors and talking to them and defining ourselves and defining our faith. And that's what started this journey, is that not only myself, my whole community and other Muslim communities throughout the U.S., and it was not a coordinated effort, but everybody came to the same realization that this cannot continue. And with the onslaught of media talking negatively about Muslims, as a community, we needed to do something. We needed to define our own selves, our own faith. So as Adam said, that was a few years after 9/11 when we started the construction of our new mosque. And there was a lot of discussion about, well, what to do with respect to parking, and it was a simple solution. Here's a big parking lot. Maybe we should approach our neighbor and ask him. And, you know, the worst that could happen, they could say no. And the best, they can say yes, which they did. And that was a very gracious act because it was off the wall idea that you know, this big church that we didn't have any relationship with, and with all what was going on, it was like, well, yeah, I mean, they're gonna say no, but hey, you know, let's try to do it. And that was a happy coincidence because I met Adam, I met Bob, I met a lot of good friends at the church. We always love to have them over because they're friendships built with the community on a human level.
Yes.
Now you asked about you know, challenges and stuff. From the Muslim side, I mean, the challenge is always with people is mistrust. You know, for The problem is that over 100 years, if you ask any Muslim coming from any country in the Middle East or even in Asia or Africa, they have a story to tell about colonial powers and coming
yes.
to the East and colonizing the Middle East and doing this and doing that. So there's always this element of mistrust. And one of my goals is that I hope that a Christian would walk into a mosque without being worried that he's gonna be converted, and also for a Muslim to walk into a church and not worry that he's gonna be converted either.
Yeah.
Or that there is no agenda in there. You know, that
yeah.
really you're walking into a house of worship, like Adam said, that we understand that there are differences, and I told Adam that the second or third time that we met.
Mm-hmm.
That there are differences that we're not gonna resolve. But why focus on those differences that we cannot do anything about? Because if the differences were not there, we'd have the same faith, and that's not God's will. God's will is that people have different faiths. Let's not focus on those differences and focus on a huge areas of commonalities
yeah.
that both
yeah.
both faiths call to. And that's what we yeah. try to educate people.
Okay. Now, Osama, I definitely understand some of the pushback that maybe Adam would receive since I work in the same field. But what kind of pushback do you get from Muslims? You know, here you are being a peacemaker, reaching out to Christians and Westerners. Share with us some of the pushback you get, because I'm sure there's some people that don't understand you.
Yeah, some people don't understand the whole effort. The problem is that if you come from the Middle East, especially, probably a third of our congregation, they have been in the state for probably the past 5 years. So these are newcomers that came from conflict zones.
Yeah.
They always intertwine politics and religion, and the problem is that they see politics only from one way, because a lot of them
yeah.
live in countries where for the longest time the government told them one side of the story. And they always try to put the seeds of mistrust, and they play on religious mistrust or ethnic mistrust. So, and that's how they stay in power. So the pushback comes from people that do not understand that, and they still have this mistrust in them. Now, we're blessed that our imam, which is our religious leader, he's well-educated in religious. He's well-educated in religious studies, and he teaches them the right and proper way of the faith. The faith does not call for extremism. The faith calls to love your neighbor, similar to what the Christian faith says. So there's a lot of commonalities, and that's what we do. We try to re-educate these people, but some of them, and now even in the Middle East, you still have upsurge and radicalism. That's and even though they're a minority, you still have people impacted by that. And those are discussions that we always have at the mosque about how to reach to those people, because some people they even have tendencies when they see somebody that's extremist to think that that's the path to follow, because again they come from these backgrounds of being defeated, being ousted, so they always gravitate towards that ideology, and that's what we try to re-educate them. And hopefully, we have a lot of success with people. I mean, people who, again, they don't want to change and they keep on this ideology. Eventually, they end up leaving. But again, I mean, with time, you find them that they come back to their senses, and after a few months, they find them coming back and then re-engaging. So these are the type of challenges that we have.
Yeah, let's shift a bit to the personal journey. You've both shared about your organization and some of your peacemaking efforts, but it'd be interesting to hear what led you to try and pursue peace through dialogue and the kind of things you're doing. Osama, could you lead this one off?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, my personal journey started from 9/11. And on 9/11, I didn't know what was going on because it happened in New York. It was 3 hours ahead. The way I happened, I found out about 9/11 is that when I woke up in the morning, there was a message on my phone, and it was from a colleague that I used to live in Connecticut. My colleague in Connecticut called me, and he said, "I hope you're okay." I mean, that's what he said. He said, "I hope you're okay.
Wow, yeah.
You know, I know that this crazy thing that happened doesn't reflect on you." I was like, "What crazy thing happened?"
Oh boy.
The second voicemail that I had on my phone was from the head of the math department at Glendale Community College, and telling me that if I don't want to teach that day, that's fine because he understands. Like, what's going on? So I turned the TV on and I saw what's going on. But see, this is what true friendships do. I mean, first of all,
good. Go ahead.
Because they you know, although both of these gentlemen were Christians, I mean, they could have felt into the trap of saying, "Well, geez, you know, that guy is one of them." No, they were able to make that distinction. So so that's what started my journey into this. This is something that needs to change. That something needs to happen. Because at that time I felt, you know, even beyond that, I lived in Connecticut in the first World Trade Center bombing happened when I was there, and also Oklahoma City happened when I was in Connecticut. At that time there was a guy in the office. He was very strong in his faith. He used to bring me books, you know, he used to bring the Bible and stuff, and I used to give him some books too. I said, "Well, fine, I'll read if you read." But he was a very nice gentleman. When the Oklahoma City bombing happened, he saw me and he said that he was with a group of people when that happened, and they immediately said that it's a Muslim that did that. And he said, he told me that he told the people that he was with in the church, he said, "I don't think so because I know one of them in my office. I don't think that anybody like him would do the Oklahoma City bombing." And it was very very touching what he said to me because my relationship with him was confined within the office. It was very professional. You know, he worked with me, but those kind of things stay with you. And then when September 11 happened, you reflect back on a lot of these things. And you say, "Well, you know, I cannot just be bystander over here. I need to do something." Now, you touched about peacemaking. Well, the thing is, all of this is part of peacemaking because imagine if the guys that did September 11 really had the relationship with Christians or Jews or other people. Do you think he would do that? I mean, he would see them as friends, not as enemies.
Yes.
Yes.
And
well, I think it's significant.
It is, and this is the biggest problem. I mean, if people take a step back and look at, for example, people who do these kind of acts, usually they isolated themselves. They don't have a relationship even with their own communities, because they want to justify something like that. And you know, any faith stresses on the humanity of everybody else. And if these people knew anything about their own faith, even they would know that that their faith stresses on humanity, and it doesn't ask for killing innocent people. So these guys isolated themselves, and if they had a friend, a Christian friend or a Jewish friend, or a Buddhist friend or whoever, I mean, if they were in that plane thinking that they're going to kill 3,000 people, well, guess what? They would think about their friend.
Yes.
And that's why this is very important with respect to peacemaking, because if everybody saw others as their own friends, as their own family, then they wouldn't do this.
Well, I think it's very profound that this emphasis on friendship. Both of you have mentioned fear, mistrust, that personal relationship. I know in history, whenever there's conflicts, there's a dehumanization, even demonization of the other or the enemy. Thus, we need to build those bridges. So it's beautiful to hear these stories, Osama, of people that have reached out, and then you've reached out to them and build those bridges of friendship. Now, Adam, do you want to add anything about your personal journey?
Absolutely. Before I went to Lebanon in 2008, my knowledge of Muslims and Islam was limited to what I'd read in textbooks at Fuller Seminary. It was good information. It was not the kinds of books I was mentioning earlier, and so it was helping me sort of prepare my heart to meet Muslims and really build these friendships. But when I interacted with Muslims in Lebanon, and then as I returned home, and subsequently wherever I've traveled in the Muslim world or met Muslims wherever I have, I've just felt a warmth, a sincerity about their faith, a hospitality that, frankly, I think is really missing a lot of times in my own faith tradition.
Yes.
And it's very attractive to me. And so it's funny because Osama and I, when we get together, we end up a lot of times at the same conclusion. If people at Orangewood Church and the other churches in our community would just be better followers of Jesus, so many of our problems would be solved. And our second conclusion is, if the Muslims in Phoenix and around the world would just be more submitted to God and be better Muslims, we would really have a lot of our problems solved. So we just are on this faith journey together, and they are different paths. And I agree with what Osama said. I think that's the beauty of diversity, of a God that has given us free will. And so we choose to use that free will toward peacemaking and bridge building. For me personally, it's not an option anymore. I have these relationships. I have this knowledge. I feel like I have a calling on my life to be a bridge builder and to help other people to have the kinds of experiences that I've had. Not everybody can go to Lebanon. I understand that. But everybody can, if they're brave enough, go and knock on the door of an Islamic center in their own community like I did. And I think that people would find the same kind of warmth and hospitality that I've found. And I love what Osama said about extremists isolating themselves, and I think that's so true, because the people that I know who have had a change of heart in the way that they've seen Muslims and interacted with the Muslims in their community has happened because they've met someone like Osama, who is really a true follower of God and trying to be submitted to God in all that they do. And so I think that's the key. It sounds very simplistic, but I think that's the key to this kind of track two peacemaking and diplomacy is relationship building. And it really is fundamental to helping people come out of that mistrust and come out of that fear and misunderstanding.
Well, I think that's a beautiful segue, Adam. Let's take some of the lessons you're learning from peace building and peacemaking at a local level and just reflect more globally. You mentioned track two. Traditionally, diplomacy is state to state. I would like to hear from both of you men. What do you think the value is of what is called track two diplomacy, non-governmental officials, in this case, religious leaders from different countries, different backgrounds, coming together to work towards peace? Osama, could you share a little bit about how you view the value of religion and peace building in the kind of a track two diplomacy as opposed to state to state?
Well, when politicians are trying to work on peacemaking, they always have different intentions. I mean, their thought could be in making peace, but they always think about their jobs, that they want to be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
So they could say something in private different than what they say in public.
Mm-hmm.
And also they have to look at their constituents, and are they going to reelect them? So if they say what they have in their heart, they might not be reelected. Mm-hmm. So they opt to do easy things or follow what the masses want. When you're dealing with peacemaking on track two level, which is you talk to people and you try to re-educate them. I mean, it's not a fast process. It's
right.
going to be a slow process.
Excellent point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what my faith calls for patience, and I'm sure that faith calls for patience too. But and probably you're not going to see the immediate results in a year or 2 years. But it will be lasting results, and that's the difference between the two. Because politicians, they want to do the easy thing. I mean, they could be like in office for 4 years, and then they leave, and somebody else will come that probably will have different views that goes to a different direction. But very few of politicians can offer solutions that can last for a long time. I mean, give you an example. The treaty that was signed between Israel and Egypt. It was a peace treaty, yes. It stopped hostilities, but 30 years afterwards now, or 35 years or whatever, the people are not friends.
Yeah.
Hostilities are still there.
Yeah.
Because it was
not built on
a proper foundation. So, again, this is a very slow process. It's like, roasting a chicken, but it's, if you take a slow process of roasting the chicken, it could taste really good, but it's going to take some time. Yeah, and one last thing that I want to mention, and see, this is very, it brings highlights this issue. Back in 2011 when we did the peace walk, there was Terry Jones who wanted to burn copies of the Quran, and that was happening at the same time. Now you had the politicians, giving their opinions about what they should do. Should they go and talk to him? Well, I cannot do that because the Constitution says you cannot do that. And so anyway, there's a lot of commotion that really didn't resolve the problem. Now, at the mosque, we decided, we met and we were talking about this issue. So our imam decided to give a sermon about the Islamic view of how to deal with revelation, with divine text. And it was something new for me. I did not know that actually the teachings of Islam says that the same way you deal with the Quran, the same way you handle it, as Muslims you have to purify it, you have to do ablution before you touch the Quran. Well, it turns out that it's the same thing when you touch a Bible and when you touch a Torah. Now, the thing is, what this brought to people, because some people, they thought, well, if he burns the Quran, I'm going to burn the Bible.
Yes.
Or if he burns the Quran, I'm gonna go and burn everything else. It was like, but with education, it turns out that, well, if you do that, well, you're not following your faith. So, somebody could come and have said, well, no, you don't do this and do that, don't do that. But with education, you reach to the people, and then you teach them what's the Islamic way of dealing with this situation. That if somebody does something wrong, you don't meet it with the wrong. And this is the same message of Christ. So if somebody does something bad, you don't turn the same thing. If this person is misguided, this person intends to provoke others so they can be violent, then that's not the way you react as a Muslim or a Christian or a Jew.
Well, beautiful story. Adam, why don't you comment on how you think Track 2 diplomacy can complement or work with more traditional state-to-state diplomacy?
I think the question really revolves around what kind of peace we're searching for, and Usama really touched on it. You could ask the question, are Egypt and Israel at peace? And on paper, yes, they are at peace. They're not launching rockets at each other. There aren't active hostilities between armies. But I think the kind of peacemaking that Track 2 diplomacy encourages and that we believe our faiths demand of us, actually, is the kind of peacemaking that in the Bible in the Old Testament is called shalom. It's the same concept in the Quran of salam. is a more comprehensive piece. It's a piece at the heart level where not only am I working for my nation not to hate your nation, but the people within our nations to not have hostilities within their own hearts toward each other. That's the kind of peacemaking that Track 2 diplomacy can affect. And I agree with everything that Usama said. It's a slow process, which can be discouraging because we live in a microwave culture. And so slow cooking is not something that we are extremely fond of. For example, if a piece of paper was signed today between Israeli and Palestinian leaders that said, now we have peace, that doesn't change the hearts and minds of the people on the ground. I'm more interested in the efforts that are happening between Israeli and Palestinian, for example, people, grassroots people on the street who are deciding in their minds and in their hearts to really make an effort to love their neighbor. That's the kind of peacemaking that's going to make a difference in our world on a large scale. We believe that that's the kind of peacemaking that Jesus called us to. I believe that although he was grossly misunderstood, I think that's the kind of peacemaking that Muhammad would want us to shoot for. And I think that's the kind of peacemaking that's accessible and tangible to us as Americans. A lot of people ask me, well, you know, you're involved in these things, and that's just so far out of my league. And I ask people, well, when you see someone different than you, can you smile at them instead of showing fear? And it's just little things like that make a difference in people's hearts. It's not going to change our world in an instant, but it's just those little efforts, going out of your way to show someone that you're not afraid, going out of your way to show someone that you care, even though according to society there's no reason you should care. Those are the kinds of Track 2 grassroots peacemaking efforts that I think will make a difference here in the United States and abroad. I hope that the relationship that we've built on a personal level, Usama and I and between our congregations can be an inspiration to those sorts of peacemaking efforts here at home and abroad.
Thank you so much, Adam. I remember I was in Palestine talking with Sami Awad, a Christian Palestinian peacemaker of Holy Land Trust, and Sami said something similar to me. He said, Rick, if there's a two-state solution right now, you think that's going to change the hearts? You think we'll have real peace? I so appreciate Adam and Usama. I just see at least three things that you've emphasized that's so significant, that Track 2 diplomacy has more neutrality. We're not trying to win votes. We're trying to be faithful to our scriptures, whether Christian, Muslim, or Jew, or whatever religion. Secondly, this long-term slow process, that's what it's going to take, person to person. And there's where Track 2 diplomacy can be so complementary to traditional diplomacy. And then I love the emphasis on the comprehensive nature of shalom or salam that we need to work toward. I'd like to give you an opportunity to share just some brief concluding remarks before we close. Osama?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to thank CSN. This is really a great opportunity. And also, I want to tell you that, you know, I appreciate Adam as a friend first because, you know, some people, even if you... if you're different than other people and stuff, it's very hard to connect with somebody and to be a friend. And I consider Adam to be a friend first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing with respect to track two diplomacy, I'd like to add that one thing that it brings is the humanity of the other.
Yeah.
And this is something that's very important. I think President Obama, when he visited Israel this time and he talked to Israeli students, he tried to bring that up and tried to bring the humanity of the Palestinians to them, that they have, as humans, they have shared goals. And this is the importance of this dialogue, that regardless of what your faith, you're still a human and you have... you have a lot of commonality between your brother and sister. So a lot of times people tend to forget about that. especially in the heat of the moment. I mean, if you're disputing with somebody or arguing with somebody, sometimes you can get so angry that you forget that that he's your brother or sister. Or
yes.
So that's what this type of peacemaking brings us, brings the humanity of others.
Thank you very much. Adam, any concluding remarks?
Yeah, I agree with what Usama said. I think for us as followers of Jesus, we believe that everybody's created in the image of God. And there are far-reaching consequences to that belief.
Yes.
And it's overwhelming sometimes to think about all of the different aspects of our society that don't line up with that understanding of the other as a fellow human being. But I think the hope that we have is, like we talked about earlier, it doesn't take being a diplomat. It doesn't take having great education or amazing travel opportunities. It takes the willingness within your own heart to treat the people around you as a human being and with love and respect in small ways and big ways. And so I think that's our story. That's the story of our two congregations. It started with a simple request from the Islamic Center to use our parking lot, and us, the church, saying, well, that's not a big deal. Why not? And just if that letter had been answered in a different way, I think about how different things may have turned out between us. So I think just for people listening, it starts with little things, and that's how you build this kind of worldview, just little steps at a time, and I think that's how we can create a better world for ourselves and for our children.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Usama, for a very informative and inspirational time. So many things to reflect on. Thank you for your efforts and your courage in reaching out and building bridges. I also want to thank the Charity and Security Network for this opportunity. It's been a great interview, men. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.